lineouts, racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds. This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Brendan Nell.
And I'm Liam Delcombe.
Liam, it's festive. There's a lovely saying that comes from the Cape. Something that's festive. I can't say the word because we're on a family podcast here, but I think you get the vibe. You're looking at me like you don't get the vibe.
No, I do get the vibe, especially when I look at you. I mean, it's you've embraced the festive spirit wholeheartedly with those earphones and your shirt, your festive sort of island holiday sort of shirt that you're wearing. It looks like you're going to be drinking with TC, Rick, and Thomas Magnum at some point this afternoon.
Some people might not get that reference. Some people that are younger than us, yeah. But you obviously
talk. Well, I better say, sorry. Yeah, those are characters on the 80s TV series Magnum PI. Some of you may be familiar with that. Brendan looks like he could be an extra in.
Well, what I actually really need at the moment is something with a little umbrella in it, some sort of drink with a little umbrella, because I'm feeling very festive, even though we haven't really stopped working. And rugby doesn't stop over this festive period anyway. But unlike Magnum, I don't have such a nice car that he had. We're always fascinated by the Ferrari 308 GTS that he rode. A really nice car, but mine's a little bit less. What's the word? In your face, I suppose. And doesn't go as fast. But anyway, speaking of going fast, we've had a year that's flown by. A hell of a year, Liam. I probably think of the superlatives to use for it because it's some good, some bad. But on the Springbok front, at least, a lot of good. In fact, I think the only bad say is probably World Rugby snubbing Rusty as coach of the year. Other than that, I think we basically got nothing to complain about. And Springbok fans?
Yes, it has been a very good year. If you look at last year, South Africa coming home with the World Cup trophy, a lot to live up to this year, obviously. Being World Cup champions, you know, brings its own pressures. I think the only real missing jewel would be not securing the series win against Ireland. That was due to a couple of minutes in that second test that didn't quite go the Springboks' way. And Ireland, to be fair to them, did exceedingly well. So apart from that, I mean, a very good year for South Africa. What's it, 11 wins out of 13? Won a whole host of trophies. What is it, the Rugby Chaps, the Mandela Challenge Shield, the Qatar Airways Cup, Freedom Cup. Yeah, I mean, if the America's Cup was... What's up for grabs?
But the Rafa Cup as well.
So very good year for Springbok fans. And yeah, I mean, you can probably think of a million, not a million, but quite a few Springbok players who had outstanding years.
I found it quite funny because there was one rugby website very linked with World Rugby. We did their top 100 players of the year. And despite all the Springbok dominance, still found a way to show that they're part of a cult and named a certain French player as their best player in the world. No matter that there were so many Springbok candidates as well. If it's just for the year, I mean, we can go into all the details, but where certain people don't play as much rugby as others and club games get elevated above test level in those sort of rankings. It's all subjective, but yeah, to me, it's hard to pick a Springbok player of the year. I think it's going to be very hard when they pick the South African rugby player of the year anyway, but it's got to be between Ox, Cheslin, Peter Steph and Eben. And how do you make a choice between all of those? Because they were just all exceptional this year. And not discounting a bunch of their teammates either.
Yeah, it is a difficult choice. I saw that form last week, the one that we had to fill in. I made my choice. But let's just say it may not be in line with what happened at World Rugby level.
Well, yeah. I think there's also mine would probably be a bit different as well. To what World Rugby named as the player of the year. I think we should see in a couple of weeks' time. But saying that, I mean, there were so many good things that came out of SA Rugby this year or Springbok Rugby this year. You mentioned the loss against Ireland. I remember sitting there in Durban and actually being, as it hasn't happened often in my career, but actually being stunned when that drop goal of Kieran Frawley went through, that the time was up. I sort of looked up and I glanced at the scoreboard and I saw the Irish celebrating and I realized the time because you were so absorbed in that game and there was so much going on that both those test matches against Ireland just flew by. And so, I mean, to lose by that is no disgrace. Then we had the one against Argentina where Marty Lubbock missed the kick. You could say the Springboks shouldn't have been in that situation to begin with. But those are the only two blights on a very, very successful year. And to me, I know everyone, the popular thing would be say the two wins over the All Blacks were the highlights of the year. I think in many respects they were. But to me, when the Boks were in Perth, and I know Australian rugby was in doubt, but when they started that process of selecting 13 or 10 different players, I think it was 10 changes for that test, and you had Jan Hendrik Wessels scrumming at loose head and Johan Krobler at hooker and Thomas de Toy at tight head, go through the whole team. But there's so many of those players. Ron Okio came on in that test and cemented almost his spot in the Boks for the rest of the year. When you change that, and we've both been on tour in Australia, it is a notoriously tricky place for Springboks to play. And while they won the first test with their main team, to me, one of the biggest wins there was that one in Perth, just for the pure fact that so many other Springbok sides have come up stuck in Perth against Australian sides that really weren't that good. And this side, the 10 changes with a lot of youngsters, showed just how healthy Springbok rugby was.
Yeah, it was a performance with real authority. That carried real authority. Almost from the get-go, the Boksers never looked as if they were going to be in trouble. I would say, I mean, that's probably a decent call in terms of picking out one game. But for me, and it ties into what you're saying, is then the level of consistency. Yes, you had the couple of minutes against Ireland in that second test where they weren't entirely at the races, and there were distinct reasons for that. You look at the game against Argentina, the one that they lost. Okay, a lot of focus on the Marty Lubbock penalty, but there's also, as you rightly pointed out, a couple of other things that could potentially have been done differently. But for me, if you look at the body of work across 13 tests and hardly ever dropping off the pace, I mean, that speaks of a team that's moving forward, a team that is confident, a team that has been galvanized, not just obviously through the Rugby World Cup, but it's been taken further. And I think that's the scary thing for the Springboks opponents over the next few years, because you've also got those 51 players. I mean, 51 players being used this year, what is it, 12, 13 debutants. It's just, they're in a very good space, there's no doubt. But that's one thing, waxing lyrical over the Springboks. If you have to compete, you have to contextualize with what else went on. You could have made the point at the start of the year that, or asked the question, will there be a big World Cup hangover for the likes of Ireland and maybe France? In the case of Ireland, you have to say that there was very little World Cup hangover. I mean, they sort of just got on with it. That game they played in Marseille against France at the start of the Six Nations, that was a performance of really a show of force, just to show everybody that there is no World Cup hangover. And they beat the pants with France that evening. They did have the blip against England in the Six Nations, but then went on to win the championship fairly comfortably. And then, of course, came to South Africa and they were able to draw a series. I mean, so they then had the blip on the end of year two against the All Blacks. But there again, I mean, they've had a successful year, I think. If you were to put that to the Irish management and even the I suppose their fans, they'll also step back from this year thinking, okay, there's a job that was fairly well done. I mean, if you look at France, they again had that early setback against Ireland, but then regrouped very well, and I thought ended the year strongly as well. England, obviously, there's lots of questions about the coaching, and there's a bit of a merry-go-round happening there. The questions about their game plan. If you look at Wales, what is it now? A dozen, 13 defeats in a row. What is it? I've lost count. All in a good place, and they've got some questions to answer there. We probably got from Scotland more or less what we got from them the year before and the year before that. I mean, they're able to win a couple of games and then they lose one, breaks momentum. But I think overall they as well. I mean, they're in a fairly decent space. And the All Blacks are thereabouts. I mean, I don't think they're that far off the Boks, to be honest. They may not have the depth the Boks have at the moment, but only 23 make it on every weekend. So when you hit that, I think that you might just scare us. And this is a wallet, I think they are all moving forward.
I was going to say, Liam, because you remind me that somewhere along the line, we heard that this was an all-black team that was robbed in the World Cup final by a certain ex-coach. Where have you heard that before? all that coach saying it and all that team was rocked when they lost. Anyway, you and I have both lived through those eras more than once. But saying that, if you look at all those teams, I think the team has made the most improvement for me. And it's strange saying the most improvement, but when you compare from where they were when they played Argentina in the first game in the Rugby Championship, the All Blacks, the way they finished off the year, I think you're right. They're not far off the box and not far off the number one spot in the world. There's a couple of chinks in their armor still, and I still would back Ireland and South Africa to over a three test series win. But they're getting better, and they've got a lot of good youngsters coming through. Satiti is an amazing player that's come through as well for them. And they've got some good youngsters coming through as well. Their average age is very young, so they've got a lot of growth that they can still do. To me, Australia, yeah, Joe Schmidt's doing his best. I'm not sure they're going to be competitive by the next by the Lions Tour, or possibly by the next World Cup, but not by the Lions Tour. I still think that's going to be rather one-sided. Ireland, to me, there are some question marks that are emerging. They are still a very, very good outfit. And how they're going to be in the Six Nations coming up without Andy Farrell is going to be very interesting as well. They've got some aging players. They've got some good youngsters coming through, but how much time they're going to give them? They weren't as bold as
he was. There's a few positions where nobody's really grabbed the jersey and sort of made it their own, which is crucial.
France, to me, have got a lot of good youngsters. And I sort of wonder, because you see these reports through the year of players sort of not wanting to play against the All Blacks and some internal strife. That's nothing new for French rugby. Over the years, we've seen many of those locker room type stories. How long can Fabien Galthié just carry on and get the best out of these guys? I suppose our Northern Hemisphere counterparts will say, as long as he has the best player in the world, he can do that, because he apparently carries every single team he's in. So I'm just being terrible. I shouldn't be like this at Christmas. He's a wonderful player. There is a lot of hype around the guy. And it's going to be interesting to see how the next year goes. If he does tour New Zealand, there's a lot of spice waiting, I think, in that series if he does go. That said, I mean, yeah, England, I think they made a real mess with Felix Jones. The worst part for England, for me, is something that Jake White said to me a while back, was he feels that if England actually get it right, they could be number one in world rugby. Because if you look at their loose boards that they've got, Ben Earl, Cunningham South, those guys, they've got some real talent in their loose boards. They've got a good lock at your front row. I don't think they're good, but they won't stand up to the box, I don't think. But they've got a good pack, and they've got some good outside backs as well. So he feels he just doesn't, and I agree. I just don't know if Steve Borthwick is the right guy to unlock that of theirs. So Scotland, Scotland this year were very clever in the way they positioned their fixtures. Anyone who goes looks at their roster, will see they played Six Nations. Then they went on a tour of Canada and USA and places like that, which they won easily. Duane from the Maverick just picked up try after try on those tours. Then they played South Africa. They played Fiji. Then they played, they played a lot of smaller sides in between their big internationals, which is very clever for them. But they've still got to beat one of the big two, three in the world. And I know they beat Australia.
Well, to be fair to them, if you the first year after the World Cup, it's probably the best way of going around treating your business done. Because I mean, it's that first year is always a building year, so it's a good chance or good opportunity for the coach to look at new players, rotate the squad a bit, and see what he's got by year two, and then sort of build more momentum in year three. So I can see why they did that.
Yeah. I think if I had to look at the Bok performance of the year, I was going to ask you, put you on the spot here, because I know we haven't prepared for this, but I would say possibly Peter Steph de Toy at Nelspruit, the way he just dominated that game. Chesn Colby maybe against England at Twickenham. I'm trying to think where else, or maybe even Chesn's try against Ireland in the first test at Loftus, that very controversial try with James Lowe threw the ball back in. There's a number of those moments to go to, but I think there's a lot of positivity around South Africa. There's New Zealand's got a lot of positivity. There are question marks about everybody else on the world calendar at the moment.
Yeah, look, the Peter Steph performance against the All Blacks is it's right up there. There's no question that That probably cemented his place among the nominees for the World Player of the Year. And he's been a phenomenon. I mean, he's a machine. We don't know down the line whether you know what shape he will be in for the next World Cup or Eben Etzebet, but they're there and they, you know, for week in and week out when they play for the Springbok, you get more or less the same performance. I mean, it's up there in the stratosphere. So as long as that lasts, I mean, the Boks are going to be in decent shape. And I think we are very lucky to have guys of that caliber playing for this length of time.
I want to change tack a little bit. I know this is almost like an end of year wrap type show for us, but we can't look away from the fact that in the last couple of weeks, we've had some really average Champions Cup performances by teams, especially the Bulls. And Champions Cup it's a talking point again. I see. Yeah, over the last couple of weeks, again, you know, some of our European and especially English counterparts talking about whether South African team should be in the European Cup, the Investec Champions Cup. It's not the European Cup anymore. I made that mistake. Sorry, Investec. But to me, I think the playing fields are at this moment extremely uneven. You just have to look at what Toulouse has and how they execute, and they're an amazing side to watch. To go away from home and win by 60 points and win at home by 70 points, yeah, there's very few teams that are going to challenge them. Do you think, Callum, or let's put it this way, I think South African teams, my thoughts are, South African teams will be able to make the step up as soon as a few things change. The never-ending debate about a global season is one, but as soon as we get our player management right, in whatever way we can, we'll be a lot more competitive in the Champions Cup. And that's the schedule, the global season, the rest periods for players, all that gets chucked into that basket. But I still think it's going to take a while before we're able to match a club like Toulouse, who have a budget of 220 million rand, as opposed to the 80 million South African rand that the Bulls and the Stormers and the Sharks have.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, that's not going to change anytime soon. So I think there's also an air of resignation among some of the South African coaches that it's very difficult to compete against those European teams. Obviously, they've been doing it for longer, so they have found a way and a formula to navigate those waters. I mean, in terms of the top 14 in France, I mean, that's very, very difficult. It's a tough league. And then, of course, you've got the Champions Cup. And a team like Toulouse obviously has this recipe for success. I mean, they haven't won this thing for not six times across its history. I think that if you give it another 2-3 years, African teams will get better at this. However, I still wonder whether the desire locally, I mean, we get all this talk and negativity from Europe about South Africa's inclusion, but I also get the sense that at the moment, the URC is still very much the thing for the competition that we aspire to winning. We kind of like look at the Champions Cup. That's a great to have, and it'll be wonderful one day to win it. But at some point, that switch will have to be flicked where it becomes a thing that you really aspire to and put everything, put your building blocks in place, get your house in order to win it. At the moment, I think there's this massive disconnect. It's as if you're basically only committing to yourself to the fixture list. You go play the game kind of vibe and make sure that there's not too much damage done, which probably isn't the right attitude to that.
I think probably the team that's probably got the most right is the Sharks, because they have the ambition through their owners of wanting to win that. The realities on the ground and are very different with injury lists, yeah, etc. And we're seeing, unfortunately, the culmination of 3 seasons of 12 months rugby never ending that takes its toll on players eventually. That's why I say the player management, the whole scenario around that. But you're right. I think the one thing that Jake said a couple of weeks ago as well is that this is test rugby in club jerseys. Now, it's a nice phrase to use, but I don't think the South African players also grasp that so much, because to me, when you see Saracens play Northampton or Bristol or Bath in the Premiership, and then you see them play in the Champions Cup, it's almost a different team. The mentality is very much what we expect from a national team. There's very much attrition, test match rugby. And I still get the feeling that our players aren't quite there yet. They don't understand that the difference.
Yeah, they're happy to get involved in a dogfight and stick at it.
Yeah.
You can see that they are more prepared for that than maybe our players. But I mean, that goes back to, I suppose, to the fact that it's still a fairly new thing. To a lot of
us. No. Well, let's hope we get there. I mean, we're coming back in January for another round of games. South African teams, all three of them in the Champions Cup, are on a very slippery slope if they lose another game. So we might not even have much participation, but let's hope that changes. Let's hope everybody's New Year's resolution is to play a lot better in the Champions Cup and take it a lot more seriously.
Okay, look, Brendan, it's that time of the year where we, Santa's on his way, so he's going to get to Johannesburg and there's no water. Don't know if the reindeer will need to replenish here, but as things stand, he might just overfly. We have the right to make a couple of wishes, and one of the wishes I have is for SA Rugby's equity deal in whatever form or shape, for them to get to a point where there's one that they find universally acceptable, that, you know, one that all their esteemed union presidents can get behind and support wholeheartedly and, move forward with a partner that can take SA Rugby as a whole to the next level.
I think my first wish, Liam, would be just one away from rugby, that you guys get a lot more water and that Joburg sorts itself out with its never-ending problems. That certain officials who are responsible for these things get a Christmas kick up the butt. And maybe have the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future visit them so they can see the harm they're inflicting. But anyway, that's another story.
Right.
That's
when you have that drink with the umbrella in it, think of that potential glass of water
There is another one around here. There's one next to it. You guys can always pop by. And I know you probably will at some point, because that's a good fishing line out there. You know, for you, yeah.
And for a glass of water, yeah.
But yeah, from SA Rugby's point of view, I think my wish is also that we bury this equity deal with a positive ending, that something gets signed that's beneficial to everybody in SA Rugby, that brings in the cash funds that it does at, and that there's not too much of there's always a couple of tough pulls to swallow with the equity deal, and that the terms and conditions aren't as bad as some people are making it out to be. We've had both Mark Alexander on the show, and we've had Rian Webolt, who both tried. We're still trying to get somebody from the other side, but hopefully when everything's signed, we'll get people to come sit together around the fire and sing Kumbaya. So that's how wonderful everything is. But let's hope that gets sorted out very soon. I think to me, I one of the things, and it's a double-edged sword, this that I wish for Christmas, is one that there's not so much animosity to South Africa from overseas. I mean, there's always going to be an amount of dislike and normal.
I think you're overthinking it. I think it's just professional jealousy.
That's probably that.
South Africa's always been a bit of a, dare I say, pariah. It's only after South Africa, after the admission, where we were the flavor of a month or maybe a few years. They love casting us, South Africa, as, you know,
as the villain
side. Yes. So, I mean, I wouldn't overthink it.
I was going to say that's the one wish, a bit more love from around the world with the way we play. But it goes hand in hand with another one. And anybody spending any time on social media will know that sometimes we don't handle ourselves very well in the way we react to those things. And our fans are also partly to blame for that. And at times, myself included, I've also taken umbrage at a couple of things that have been said online. And maybe we should be all a little less quick to jump in and have these social media fights that really don't mean anything. That's my mantra for 2025. Don't sweat the small stuff. Don't get involved in social media fights. But try and keep the passion for the game. And I hope that for everybody else.
Yeah, in a rugby sense, you don't go into every ruck. You need to pick your mates.
Exactly.
And
sort of roll your sleeves up for the right one. The other thing I would want to see next year as a, you know, as a wish is, let's get Willie to 100. Willie needs to get to 100. He deserves it. He's been a wonderful servant of Springbok rugby. A man who also cops a lot of flack from time to time. But that's the way he plays. And that is where I think that's why he's also loved the way he is, because he kind of puts it all out. He tries things and it doesn't always come off, but you'd rather have him on the field than not.
Yeah, no, definitely. But he's, I mean, I've been one of ever since he's been in a Springbok jersey, being one of his biggest fans in the Bok jersey, because he just does things that people don't see. And I mean, they see the knock-ons and they see the times he fumbles the ball, but they don't see how many assists over his career has been involved in with Springbok rugby, how many attacks he's put up. So really deserves 100. He's going to go down in the annals as a great player. And he must get to 100. And the sooner he does, the sooner the next generation can also up there. Fasek, Kieran Horn, and a couple of others, Damian Willems, can sort of start that sort of, you know, vying for that spot as well. To me, I was going to say, the other one to me, I'd like to see, this is just the personal one, and this is probably going to say because I live in Pretoria, but I'd like to see Cameron Honeycomb becoming an established Springbok star, probably at flank. I think we've got enough number eights in this country to probably fill the rest of the world rugby's top 10.
No, I quite like the look of him at eight.
He's going to have quite a bit of competition there.
There's an assertiveness. You know, you want a number eight that can pick the ball up, whether your scrum's going forward or slightly backward, pick it up and still carry with authority. You need dexterity, and you need pluck. You need, there are just certain skills that would have to be hardwired in you to be able to do that. And so far, what from I've seen, I mean, he's got that.
I've just heard a lot of talk that he might eventually end up being a six.
Then it's to cut the clock. You know, you have to have obviously finding the ways of getting people into the team. But you know, I still think he's
I agree. I think what I've seen, it's astounding to think that he's still only 22, and it's by the same fact, it's astounding to think that somebody like Sasha van Wyk and Gomzulu is still, you know, 21, 22. So we've got a lot of good youngsters coming through, and hopefully, I'd like to see a lot of them, more of them get starting roles. And of course, the nice thing to look forward to in 2025 is those two tests against the All Blacks. The Eden Park first test is going to be huge. And I think from a South African point of view, I think if there's one thing that would probably motivate the Boks, Russie, everybody around, is to break that record at Eden Park that the All Blacks have. Of course, that'll be their motivation as well to keep that record, but that's going to set up probably a bigger test for me than the Lions series, because I think it's just going to be, it should be the biggest test of the year for me. I know some of our counties.
Yeah, on that score, we should probably team up with a raft building company and, you know, get it done early and sort of set sail for on a bit of a Contiki tour, I suppose.
We can
to Auckland City.
It could keep give a totally different outlook to the last drop. Yeah. So.
Yeah, or Contiki as we know it.
Yeah. Kind of stuff. If anybody's out there that wants to sponsor a rubber duck or a raft so we can get Zilo to that test, please feel free. We will be glad to accept oars and we'll row ourselves.
You'd be wearing the right shirt if we end up on the wrong island. Anyway, my last wish should then also be, and you mentioned his name earlier, is to see Damian Willems in a Springbok jersey again. It's been a long year.
It has. But not just him. I mean, there's guys like Evan Ruiz, who's also missed most of the year with injury. All of the injured guys, that they may recover and be able to get on the field. And in one or two cases where it seems somebody like Stephen Kitsoff might not get back onto the field, that if that is the case, that there is no lasting problems for him post-rugby. Because I think that's one of the other things. It's a big thing. We all know about the concussions and about all the other problems that rugby's trying to sort out at the moment. But yeah, post-rugby injuries of any sort, May they not be there. May we all get so many more moments to celebrate in the year to come. I think Father Christmas has got a lot that he could do there as well to give us those moments. It is the end of the year. But yeah, that's it for me. I don't have much more to say. It's been such a long year.
Yes,
Santa's been out of his hand.
I think we're on episode number 72 or 73 or something like that of this podcast. And we've talked a lot, but now it's time to go and have a rest. So if you, wherever you are, listening to this, if you're listening to this, I hope you're sitting on the beach with some drink with a small umbrella in it. I'm a bit obsessed with the small umbrella at the moment. I'm going to go find myself one now. Liam and I will be back in the middle of January, the week when all the big rugby action starts. So we'll see you back then. But until then, go and make sure that you enjoy this festive time and be very festive.
Happy holidays, everyone, and come back next year in one piece and stay safe.
Definitely. See you then. Merry Christmas.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.